Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to our final half an hour here on Circles of Change. Do stick with us here on 104.1 The Truth. We will keep you posted on Gabrielle Giffords and others' condition here in town. John Justice may at any time give us an update. And frankly, my guest couldn't be more well-positioned because she has considerable experience in late-breaking news and the like. Susan Shindahat, based in New York. Welcome to the line, Susan.
Thanks so much, and I just wanted to say I just heard the news several minutes ago, and I wanted to just really extend my sympathies to everyone.
Absolutely. Here. Well, good. Well, what a timing for someone of your experience to be with us.
Boy.
Susan is a two-time New York Times bestselling author who moved from the spotlight of being the top human interest senior writer for People magazine, where she had access at that time to 43 million weekly readers, and now she has started a remarkable new model for a humane form of capitalism, as we call it, and I'm delighted to give voice to myworld.com. It's www.miworld.com if you want to join up, for those of you who are streaming. Susan's on our mission to open up the world, and in other words, change the game of philanthropy across global borders by getting the stories of people in need connected to innovators and producers of the right products and services to improve their lives. She's a 1976 graduate of the University of Michigan. She launched her journalism career with Life, Money Magazine, Picture Week, and Table TV as a stringer in Washington, D.C. through the 80s, where she also worked for Time and the Washington Star as a correspondent and news service editor. For 20 years, she then was part of the evolution of People magazine, doing extensive live and tape media appearances, speech writing, and reporting on a wide variety of portfolio of human interest work. And she's taken her to countless locations around the world for breaking news, medical breakthroughs, natural disasters, crime, and personality profiles. So with that, Susan, MyWorld.com, congratulations for this great leap of faith, really, that you've taken here in your own life.
It's lovely to hear you put the whole thing in such an articulate and concise way. And, yeah, it's a pretty thrilling project, but it somehow popped into my head, and that means I'm the one who has to run with it. And I think the overall, and you'll relate to this, and I'm sure so will your listeners, is that we're seeing this headlong rush into a change in media and technology. Everyone's all about mobile phones and instant communication and hyperlocal news, and that's all fabulous. I've certainly been in the news business long enough to know that there was an awful lot of power aggregated in the hands of relatively few, and I think we needed to have more input into news. But what I'm concerned about now is that I'm afraid that we're seeing a little bit of the cart leading the horse, and that is that the miracle is not in the technology. The miracle is what's contained in the technology and what relationships can be built using it. So it seemed to me that if we have a vast population in the developed world, and we never use the words rich and poor on my world because I don't think they really mean a lot. I think that what we say instead is that there are people in the world who have access to most of the world's material resources, and there are people who don't. And there are roughly 3 billion people who don't. And in this proliferation of technology, it seems to me that the one thing that's really missing is that none of the people on the side of the wealthy divide know any of the real human beings who live in remote parts of the world and are living their lives every day, struggling to get food on the table, take care of their children, educate their people. And, you know, I worked at People magazine, the most profitable magazine in the United States. As you've said, we had a weekly readership of 43 million people.
Right.
And a good measure of that coverage was celebrity coverage. But the stories that we used to get letters on all the time were the real human stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And that's the preponderance of the stories that I wrote. So it seemed to me, well, you know, if we could do that here, why can't we just use all this new technology and extend the boundaries and start to do ordinary People magazine style stories on little kids living in a Uyghur orphanage near the Mongolian border, you know, or little kids who are visiting a dentist for the first time in a remote mountain village in Guatemala.
Wow. Susan,
so
these
that's what I'm doing.
Those kind of feature stories, again, for those who may not be familiar with your work, you know, give us the rundown of a couple that really had a deep, soulful impact on you personally.
Well, I think one of the most difficult ones that I wrote was a story on the George Mark Children's Home, and it's located in San Leandro, California, and surprisingly, it is the only freestanding, in other words, unaffiliated, pediatric hospice for children mm-hmm. in the United States. So we heard about this story, and my editor said, you know, we think we should do it, and we want to send you out to do both the reporting and the writing on the story. And I said, well, if we're going to take on a subject like this, and we know what our readers tend to expect from us, we're really going to have to do this. We can't right. talk in generalities at a distance. So I went out and spent some time with a lovely little girl who had hundreds of little tiny tumors growing in her lungs, and she knew that she was going to lose her life probably in the soon future rather than in the distance. And she was 17 years old, Caitlin Dolligan, wonderful kid. And I did a story on her and talked to all of the people at the hospice, the oncological nurses, the parents who'd lost kids. It was just an amazing story. It really was, and took a big piece out of me to do. Mm-hmm. So we did it, and it was very well read and very well received. But what I didn't know until I found out by chance 3 years later was that single six-page story in People magazine brought in $2 million
wow.
in unsolicited donations, 5,000 inquiries, and Johnny Depp, who I had mentioned in the story because Caitlin loved him so, apparently read the story, tracked her down, called her up and spent an hour and a half on the phone with her and invited her down to the set of Pirates of the Caribbean that he was shooting in the Bahamas. And she died several months later before she could make that trip. So Depp instead invited her whole family down, and they went down onto the set. So how much more tangible proof do you need of the power of a story well told, you know?
Right.
And that's really kind of the starting point for what I'm doing now.
So myworld.com, for those of you just turned in, we have Susan Schindehet with us. It's www.miworld.com. Fabulous site that comes up, and you right away are transported here, for those of us that are U.S. based in this rich country of ours, to the distant shores, to other places that you can go and patch in and hear these stories. Susan, the one story you told me, of course, you made a reference about being there with the little kids that are seeing the dentist for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
That what you're talking about in your site now is, how do you connect those stories to ideas and opportunities for innovative products? Why don't you go with that, this idea you're holding the feet?
This was something that used to bother me at People magazine. I wrote stories about a lot of different things, sometimes little sick kids who needed help. I always tried to end the stories on some note of uplift.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems to me, I was told this by my aunt, who's a successful children's writer. She said, Susie, if you're trying to affect someone in telling a story, don't write about how hard someone's crying. She said, tell the story of how hard they're trying not to cry. That's the human spirit.
Beautiful.
So no matter what the stories were in People, I wanted readers to reach the end of them and think, oh my gosh, you know, I could do something to help, maybe even in my neighborhood. So that was my orientation. But it was a real frustration, because a lot of times all you could do was just put a link to some website and maybe make a donation. That
mm-hmm.
was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a responsibility as a writer that if you're going to kind of jerk someone around emotionally, mm-hmm. if you're really going to affect them, you have to give them some kind of opportunity to really do something substantive. So the beauty of my world is that it incorporates new technology, and what we're going to do for the first time anywhere is to involve corporations so that for the first time users, say they read the story of a little girl who's an AIDS orphan at the Double Joy AIDS Orphanage in Bondo, Western Kenya, and they read her story and see she's all dressed up in a little party dress for visitors, and then you look down and she's wearing a big pair of dirty gunboat boy's shoes. What if, for the first time, you could read her story, reach out, click a button, and actually send a wholesale pair of baby shoes.
Baby shoes, yeah.
And have them delivered. So I thought, well, that's an interesting idea. And I thought, well, that must be impossible. So I met one of the top shippers for UPS globally. I told him what I wanted to do, and I said, is this doable? And he said, Susan, if you want to ship by ocean container, this is absolutely doable. And he said, I'll do you one better. He said, I think this kind of project may be the sort of thing that UPS has been looking for to expand into emerging markets globally. And I said, yeah, that's what I thought. So what My World represents is kind of a joining of a number of different things. One of them is professional quality storytelling. I mean, there's lots of content out on the website about people in the developing world, but most of it isn't really something that appeals to an audience in our part of the hemisphere. So what we're and People Magazine were put together every week. We took reports from field correspondents and turned them into top quality editorial material. That's what we'll do, but instead of just leaving the stories there on the page, as it were, we're going to give readers and users a whole spectrum of opportunity on how to get involved, to learn more, sometimes just to say hello to people in a remote village.
Well, you when you and I first met and were connected by Bruce Frankel here recently, also based in New York, that the real compelling thought that got my attention was when you said that there's a $220 billion availability of funding out there. From this is the click here for $5 possibility to
tap. That's right. And, you know, several weeks ago, there was all kinds of news coverage on something called the Giving Pledge. And that's people like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett and Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook announcing that they're going to give half or most of their fortunes to charity. Now, that's wonderful, and it represents a sea change. But what was lost in that coverage is that all of the money that we're talking about from these very, very wealthy people accounts for 1% of the charitable giving in the United States every year. I've done all the research, University of Indiana figures from the Philanthropy Center there, and the dollar amount of small everyday donors, now that's a median $50 contribution, the dollar amount every year, and it's pretty much constant even in times of economic downturn, that total figure, as you say, is $220 billion every year. Just in the United States.
Just in the United States, yeah.
And it seems to me that how much more demonstration do you need of people who are willing to reach out and try to help? Now, a lot of that giving is religiously based. A lot of it is domestic. But all that says to me is that the same generosity of spirit that these people are manifesting can also apply to other parts of the world. It's just that opportunity has never been presented to these people
We didn't
before.
Know how to do it. Or, of course, many of us, when we hear of these international disasters and we want to donate, the response is, well, you know, we can't really send clothes or other items you want to donate, or even money. We're concerned about it because of the corruption, crime, or graft on the other end. We're not sure if the money will really get to the ground.
Exactly.
So your point of connecting the source with that engine out there, and particularly like you and I both, we mentor a lot of young people in their, you know, teens and 20s, and this passion and desire to see the world through others' eyes, not just through something they read in the book, is really, really key.
I think it's amazing. And, you know, will these connections work every single time on the last mile in a remote village? Well, obviously not. We know that. But there are two important points here. Number one is that what we want to do with My World is, if we've provided a little flip camera to an NGO in a remote location and they've given us the raw content for a story, we want to make sure that 8 weeks later, when a container of baby shoes arrives at that little NGO, we want the NGO to videotape the FedEx boxes and the little kids opening up their shoes. This is a kind of veracity and truthfulness and transparency that just doesn't exist now. And the second point, which is very important, is that I want to make it clear that I'm not so stupid that I think that sending a pair of baby shoes or a tractor or a frying pan or street chalk or books is going to end world poverty. That's not the idea. What my thought is that if you're really honest about it, what's the biggest religion in America? Well, it's consumerism. We know about buying things and giving presents and giving things to others, but we don't really have the opportunity to do that with people who don't have very much in remote regions. So by involving corporations in this way, we're doing two things. Number one, giving these little products presents. We never use the word donors or donate on My World, but if you want to give a present or send a gift, that's what you can do on My World. It's a tool of emotional engagement for users in this country. It's to make them stop and think, oh my gosh, this little kid I saw on the internet, she has to go barefoot over sticks and glass. She doesn't have any shoes. It's a way of making all of these kind of abstract issues very, very clear and easily accessible. And the second thing that this is going to allow us to do is to go to major corporations, and I'm approaching and trying to approach companies like Coca-Cola, Nike, Cisco Systems, GE, and to say to them, if you have an appropriate wholesale product, for instance, GE makes little hand-cranked baby warmers that they're trying to sell in remote villages in India. If we give you a global wholesale sales outlet for those products and services, then you should pay us advertising fees. And in exchange, we will give publicity to your appropriate products, direct them to our users, and we'll also help publicize your really terrific CSR or corporate social responsibility
initiative, right,
all around the world. And thirdly, we will give you very favorable global branding, which is extremely important. And lastly, and perhaps to them most important of all, we will give them, in some cases, a very first presence in remote emerging markets.
And in fact, that's when I gave that introduction, this idea, you've coined that phrase, the humane form of capitalism, that there's this huge win-win, crossing barriers, but the idea that My World wants to be that tool for emotional engagement. At a time, quite frankly, Susan, you and I would agree, there's been so much disengagement of people for technology, for all of the best of intentions, but there's been unintended consequences.
That's right. And I suppose this is the time to bring up where this whole idea was really born.
Yes.
And that's back in 2006. I live in Manhattan, and I met some paramedics, some EMS guys here in New York, who had gone to Pakistan 6 months before, 2 weeks after the earthquake that killed 73,000 people. They saw the images on TV, and they said, you know, trauma, this is what we do. They figured out how to get donated flights and medical supplies, and they went over there. Bob Simon of CBS actually ran into them by chance, did a segment on them that later won an Emmy. And I ran into them about 3 months later, and they told me they were going to return to Pakistan with some temporary shelters and more equipment, and I asked if I could go with them. They said yes, and I convinced my editors at People Magazine to sign off on sending their top human interest writer to the remote region of Azad Kashmir, not far from the border between Pakistan and India, where the long-standing war has been taking place. And this is a very, very remote region. I slept in a dirt-floored tent for a couple of weeks. There were guys with AK-47s around. There was a Mujahideen training camp right up the road off a dirt path. And in the first 5 days, now this is 6 months after the earthquake, most of the people who were grievously injured had died, but there were still cases of trauma and pneumonia and all kinds of things that could so easily be taken care of with just rudimentary medical care.
Right.
We saw 2,500 patients in the first 5 days with a staff of 12. So I had a very, very close experience with hundreds of Urdu moms and little babies and played with them in the camp and walked through the villages, and I had the most interesting, fulfilling, engaging, amazing experience.
And I can't imagine the idea of coming back to New York, as you said to me, and sitting in your cubicle with your cheese sandwich every day and thinking that was going to be for the rest of your life. Well, Susan Shindahat, I can't tell you, congratulations. congratulations on your launch. We're going to keep track of what you're up to for our listeners. Please access MyWorld, MIWORLD.com. Keep posted. Susan and her organization are up for a likely award, I will say, of major grant funding to get this off the ground. But Susan, for you to give us these life lessons at a time when many people are thinking about what is 2011 about, couldn't think of a better way for us to launch here in January. Thanks for joining us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you
so much. You bet. We'll be in touch. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, 877-544-2580.